Hello, you are listening to Third Waves.
Third is a platform that amplifies underrepresented voices through print, events, and on the airwaves.
You're joined by me, Tribe, DJ, and radio hosts.
Me, Daniela, writer, musician, and producer.
And myself, Rona, stylist, founder, and editor-in-chief of Third. This is all my half East Asian BFFs. Welcome back. If you're tuning in for the first time, we recommend checking out the other episodes too, but you can also just dive in here with us.
On this episode, Zach, Nigel, Joe, and Daniela talk about their relationship with food.
Hi everyone, welcome back to my half East Asian BFFs. I am Daniela. I'm half Danish, half Chinese. I'm a writer, a musician, and a producer, and I produce Third Waves. And my pronouns are she, her, they. Welcome.
Hi, I'm Joe. My pronouns are they, them. I'm a junior editor and editorial assistant at Third, and I also do a whole host of other things. I do circus, contortion, aerial hoop, art modelling, you name it, I do it.
Hi everyone, my name's Zach. I am half Thai, half English. I'm 30 years old and I'm a lawyer. My pronouns are he, him.
Hi, I'm Nigel. I'm 49 years old. I'm half Hong Kong Chinese, half English. And I'm a climbing instructor and I've lived in London my whole life.
I forgot to say, I'm half Chinese Malay and half Scottish.
Oh yeah.
Most important.
One of the details that I forgot to mention in all the previous episodes about that dinner party where we ended up being like the only people in the room and then we were all half East Asian and half white was the reason why we were there. Zach, do you remember like why we were having this dinner?
We were making Thai curry paste, green curry paste.
Exactly. We got together very specifically because we wanted to learn how to make Thai green curry paste from you and your brother Reese. And we spent like, I mean, we were hanging out, but we spent 5 hours making like an enormous amount of Thai green curry paste, like learning, taking notes, and then we were all going to take batches home, freeze it, and then like use it to make delicious food later on, right? So like the whole event itself was centered around food making and being really studious. And it was like, yeah, so much fun. And so it's like very apt to just recall that because this episode we're going to talk about food. Our relationship to food and how, culturally, like Asian or white cultures, like our experience of it differs or, yeah, around food. And to kick it off, I have a fun question for you guys. I thought about this yesterday in the shower and I was just like, oh my God, can't wait to ask this question. As you know, it wasn't in the shower, it was when I was eating. That makes more sense. So question is, if you had to only have one utensil, would you keep the spoon or the chopstick? You should see their faces around the table.
Spoon.
I'm not good enough with chopsticks.
Oh.
Chopsticks.
Me too.
If I was better with chopsticks, I would choose chopsticks.
Thai people only use chopsticks for noodles. We eat everything else with a spoon.
Oh, wow. So. I didn't know that.
We eat everything with chopsticks.
Everything with chopsticks.
I was trained as a child to add a lot of cold dinners until I could use chopsticks well enough.
Cold dinners?
Yeah, the food would go cold.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Until I could pick up which I was going to take.
Right. I remember being in Malaysia once, my granddad watching me painstakingly eat noodles with chopsticks when I never had before, and it was taking me so long, but every bite that I successfully launched into my mouth, he gave me such a look of pride. Oh. Never seen anything like it.
That's a nice memory. Yeah, 100% chopstick for me. Like, because what do you need a spoon for? You can just pick up the bowl or like the cup.
Exactly. Anything else you can drink, right?
But like Western food, exclusively spoon. Like pasta, spoon. Salad, spoon.
No, still chopsticks. Actually, I'd just kill the person making me make that choice.
You eat pasta with chopsticks?
I don't, but I would do if I had one utensil.
That's on hinge.
I mean, I don't eat spaghetti with a spoon, because how would you do that? But like,
I can though. If I had to, I can.
Simmer down.
Can you cut with a spoon?
I can cut with a spoon.
Yeah, I always find this is something that my white British friends find fascinating, is how much I cut with a spoon.
How can someone not cut with a spoon?
A lot of my friends can't do it.
If I had to choose any utensil, I would choose a fork, obviously.
What do you mean?
Like, if I had to choose any utensil.
I think the fork is the first one to go for me. Yeah, like, same. Literally, the fork no is need useless. For that.
Oh, no. That's the only one I use. Can eat almost anything just with a fork.
Cereal? Hello?
You can't really eat cereal with chopsticks either, though. So.
Yeah, you can.
Yes, you can.
Yeah, you definitely can.
Yeah,
just
but you could
it
do it with a fork, too, if you're that's going true by that metric.
That's true.
Yeah, that is true.
I would definitely go for a fork.
You only need your hands. It's fine. You don't need anything else.
Just your hands. And your mouth, yeah.
And your mouth. The mouth is a necessary...
The mouth's essential.
Necessary part of eating, Daniela. Insightful.
All right, Zach. Right, yeah, so food. The thing that I loved about becoming friends with you guys is realizing that I was not alone or the only one in like this massive obsession with food. Like, I'm constantly thinking about food, always like getting hangry. And like, Nigel, you get so hangry, don't you?
Yeah, entirely. Yeah, I'm constantly hungry. I can have just eaten a meal and still be hungry.
Yeah.
The thing you have to live with is constantly wanting to eat stuff. And
do you have a parasite in your stomach?
Very possibly, yeah. Very possibly.
You have a tapeworm.
But you're not constantly hangry, though, surely?
No.
Yeah, just every...
But yeah, every now and again, if your blood sugar drops too far, then you become annoying. But otherwise, it's fine.
Yeah, and Zach, like, when we go on climbing trips or, like, on holiday, we literally only think about what are we going to cook tonight? We're the cooks on the group, right?
Yeah, 100%.
yeah. What's your relationship to food, Joe?
My dad's a really, really good cook. Everything that he cooks has a kind of like Western slant to it, but it's just like really amazing. He grows all his own herbs, he grows his own chilies, he has his kefir lime plant. He's very good. So my food is kind of like a discount version of his. It's still pretty good, but it's like, yeah, I wish I'd learned better. That's my main thing. I just cook some variation of stir fry every night. Love tofu. Obsessed with tofu.
Different types of tofu.
Yeah,
love it.
Tofu skins.
Tofu
skins.
Really
thin one.
It's so dynamic.
So good.
In a hot pot. So good.
Going back to what you were saying about always thinking about food on climbing trips and stuff, I think it's because I don't trust other people with food.
100%.
I'm like, I don't trust that people are going to make enough food. I don't trust they're going to make like a good meal that's like balanced, and it's mainly the quantity of food, to be honest. It's like, we had people around for dinner recently, and my brother cooked and he made like a massive curry, and like there was loads left over, and one of our friends said, have you ever made the right amount of food? And my brother was like, this is the right amount of food. There are leftovers, like, it's the right amount of food. And that is how we grew up, was like, there should always be food left over. Like, if you run out of food at a dinner party, like,
it's panic.
Tragic, yeah.
It is my worst nightmare. Honestly, I'd have failed. Like, that's a failure of an evening for me. Like, there has to be food left.
Also, if you don't have leftovers, it just feels like you've spent so much time creating this meal and then it's gone so quickly.
Yeah, there
you
is a practical
side to it.
You have
nothing to remember it by. That's like, so deep.
I want to relive it.
You want to remember all of that effort the next day and be like, oh, fuck yeah. Yeah. I did it.
It really is. Like, if someone says, like, is there more? And I have to respond and say, no.
Yeah.
No way, man.
I don't even do that to
so
myself.
So dramatic.
No, same. Yeah, no. I also do go for seconds and thirds basically every single meal. So.
Yeah, you eat a lot. Both of you. Nigel, you eat so much. The first time I ever went to dinner with you, I was like freaking out because not only how like much, but like how fast, because I'm an only child and... I didn't have competition for the food. I just like took my time, ate my food, and like every mouthful I'm like savoring so much and it takes ages. And then you were hoovering up and then I looked up and there was barely any food
left.
Eldest
of five, if you're slow, you starve.
Yeah, yeah, same in our household as well. But as I said, there were always leftovers, so it was kind of pointless because there was always enough food.
It's also the best bits.
Yeah, I was going to say.
You've got to be quick for the good stuff.
You want the crispy outside of the omelette, that's what you want.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I always found quite jarring is like just like the difference in literacy around food between Asian, like let's just say Chinese and British culture. Just not to generalize, but like I can say, I think this is also applies to like generally Asia and like they're like a big part of Europe. But like, yeah, people, like I feel like in Chinese culture, like people, everyone talks about food all the time. They talk about it. They talk about the meals they've made, how they make it. Like it's like a constant part of your conversation.
Or you're going out and meeting up for a meal. So going to restaurants for dim sum breakfasts, everyone goes out.
Yeah, mm-hmm. You go and sit there for like 3-4 hours, yeah. Eating constantly, drinking, and that's your like, yeah.
In Thailand, you don't ask someone how they are, you ask them if they've eaten yet.
Yeah, it's the same, yeah.
It's like how I've read that like immigrant parent love language is like cut up fruit.
Carbs and fruit.
Cut up fruit.
Oh, sorry.
No, but you know how like Asian parents will like bring you like some, I don't know, cut up orange, like it's for you. They won't say I love you.
Yeah, 100%.
But they'll bring you some cut up fruit.
100%.
It's
Isn't
so
that
true.
Beautiful?
My dad spent like, my dad cooked for a long time because he stopped working when I was like 13 or so. So my mum used to work full time, but he used to cook every night. And to be honest, I'm very glad about that development in my life because my mum, bless her, was not the best cook in the world. But my dad is great. And it almost was how he expressed his love for us. It was like, I'm going to stand in the kitchen every night and cook like a feast. Right, we had like minimum 3-4 dishes, which is just how Asians eat anyway, but minimum 3-4 dishes on the table. Yeah, he spent hours in the kitchen every single evening and it's great.
Yeah, even when I come home now, it's like entering a restaurant where I'm just constantly getting the next course and like
constantly getting the next course.
Like I'll only just be eating my noodles for lunch. He'll be like, so what do you want for dinner? And I'm like stuffed and I'm like, I don't know. And he's like, you can have this or you can have this or you can have this. I've made this like vegan adaption of this. Do you want to try that? He makes like 5 different desserts. Like also, this sounds so stupid. One of the deterrents of me continuing to live at home, like one of the motivating factors for me moving out was that my dad just made too much homemade crumble. Like, I know this isn't...
That's not a problem.
Around the table, we're like literally like our faces are like, why did you leave and where do you live? Can we go and imposter you?
Okay, it doesn't sound like a problem. Crumble is nice. I like crumble. He would make it with homemade vanilla ice cream. It was banging.
Homemade vanilla ice cream?
Yeah.
What
like,
the fuck?
Vegan vanilla ice cream. And he would put like pecans and walnuts in the crust and it was like fruit from the garden. It was lush.
Jesus Christ.
What is going on?
However, he would make one every day and it wouldn't even be finished before he'd be making the next one. And he'd be like, there's crumble in the fridge. And I'd be like, yeah, I know. There's always crumble in the fridge. Like, I was eating like most of my diet was just crumble.
That starts being the problem.
And I was just thinking. This is unsustainable. Like, so no, I had to leave.
No, but I actually have a serious question though. So your dad's Malay Chinese.
Yeah.
Which is not a cuisine that has a lot of dessert in it. Definitely no crumble.
Oh yeah, no. But this
so
is
like
what...
when did he start being obsessed with desserts and crumble?
I don't
what
know.
What is this?
I feel like after I went
I feel
vegan.
Like, sorry, just to like, I feel like Asian cooks are not very adaptable to like Western recipes. I feel like that is probably a generalization that no.
I don't
think my mum doesn't really make any...
My dad puts soy sauce in everything.
Yeah, no, I used to put soy sauce in everything too. I put soy sauce in like pasta sauce and I'd be like, it tastes yummy.
Yeah, of course. Of course.
But yeah, like I think after I went vegan, he was kind of like, oh, like fuck this. Well, he didn't say that, but that's the energy I got. But then he just like promptly went on and adapted all his recipes. It was really
so
nice.
Beautiful.
That's actually exactly the same thing happened with my dad as well.
Yeah.
I went vegan when I was like 21 or something and then moved back home after uni. And he, at first he was like, I don't understand what, can you eat cheese? Can you eat fish? You can eat chicken, right? And then once he like kind of understood, he actually enjoyed the challenge and made like vegan versions of everything.
He was a lot better at it than my mum was. My mum still will just offer me things with cheese and then be like, oh, sorry, you can't have that.
That's like me with Rona. Like I never fully remember that she's vegetarian, always tries to feed you fish and stuff. Bacon. Yeah, one time we were at uni.
That's evil.
No, it wasn't on purpose. One time we were at uni and I was like, oh, I made you this dinner. I bought like a whole place, like the flat fish, and cooked it. I was like, it's okay, she can eat fish. Comes in, I'm like, and she's eating. I was like, oh, That was cooked in bacon. Is that okay?
You're laughing about this, but I can see the pain in Rona's eyes from across the table.
I'm much better now, come on. Yeah.
Forgiven.
Forgiven.
Yeah, but yeah, my dad would make like mung bean desserts or like snow fungus with like lotus seeds and like all of this crazy shit. Black rice.
Didn't you say before we started recording this, I'm not going to have much to say about
it? Yeah, I didn't think I would, but I now that I think about it.
The crumble trauma has returned.
Like, this is something that I forget about until I, like, remember why I left home, and it's, like, genuinely a contributing factor, because I couldn't tell him to stop making it for me, because that would have been, like, telling him to stop loving me. So I just had to keep accepting it. And I didn't want him to stop making it because he had too much fruit. He had to do something with it.
Make jam? There's so much else to do with fruit.
But he was like, no, that's too much work.
What, then making a full crumble with all these nuts and vegan ice cream every day from scratch?
No. It was unhinged.
Yeah. Did your dad always used to feed your friends as well? Our friends loved coming over because they just got fed.
No, my parents were always quite weird about people coming over. I think it's still the reason why I don't really like having people around, because it was always such a big deal whenever anyone came over.
Really?
Yeah, okay. My mum, like, is feeding people. Like, come in, what do you want to eat? And then, like, always, like, makes so much food for people. Like you said about, like, what do you want to eat tomorrow morning? Like, every time I go home, if I'm staying for a week, she's like, okay, so here's what I'm thinking. Like, tonight we have this, tomorrow morning we have that, lunchtime we have this, and then we can have this. And then, like, this one day we don't have something. Do you want this or this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
In our household, it was always Chinese food weekdays and then British food at the weekends.
Oh, okay.
Sunday roast and that kind of thing for Sundays.
I used to hate it when that happened at our house, though.
But that was every week.
Oh, every God. Weekends must have been horrible.
Yeah, whenever I got a Sunday roast, I was like, oh, this isn't a great day for food, is it?
Babe. But I'd be like, I'm thinking of making a shepherd's pie. And I'd be like...
No, that's the worst one. Or like cauliflower cheese. Yeah. Oh, God. Must you? Can you refrain?
Who did the most cooking in your house? Oh, so Monday to Friday, dad.
No, not at all.
Or mum?
No, it was all my mum. My dad had this... He taught my mum how to cook. And then
Chinese food?
Yeah, Chinese food. And then totally forgot how to cook as soon as he passed the knowledge on, and hasn't pretty much cooked since.
How convenient for him.
Very convenient. Very convenient, but that's the way it was. So my mum cooked all the week. She was a live at home mum, he did work, and that was the way the household was. Very traditional upbringing. So, yeah, that's how it was. But my mum was fabulous, and I grew up mostly in the kitchen helping out, being the eldest. So pretty much anything she cooked, I could help. And I can cook pretty much anything, but I find it a chore now.
Do you?
Yeah, so Eva does all the cooking instead of me, because I can do it. I just don't like doing it.
Very traditional household.
Exactly. I do all the other housework. It's fine.
I love cooking.
I love cooking.
I really...
That's why we always end up doing the cooking for the group.
It's the paranoia mixed with the passion.
The paranoia mixed with the passion. Potent, toxic mix. Yeah. Like, everyone benefits from it, and we're like, it's not that simple. Yeah. Going back to the kind of the differences in the culture, I think one thing that I find very frustrating, like, it's more like their problem, not my problem. But, you know, this thing about textured foods, you know how, like, in Asian culture, you celebrate, like, different textures, like crunchy, chewy, like the gristle, not the gristle, but like, you know, like,
Yeah, the English interpretation that is often, it's got bits in it, so I don't like it. My brother Garvin couldn't eat anything because he wouldn't like the texture of most things.
Grow up.
If it's not stodge, it's not worth eating. I have to admit, though, I do love stodge.
Yeah, but you've come from a place of, like, you appreciate stodge for its texture specifically, as opposed to, like, that's the only thing, not the only thing you eat.
That is true.
Yeah, yeah.
The texture of the food is almost as important as the taste. It's very integral to what you're eating.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got to enjoy it for that reason as well.
Totally. And having, like, lots of different textures, there's nothing that really compares to going to, like, a feast meal out in China, where, like, you have 8 cold dishes and 8 hot dishes, and, like, you're thinking about the different textures and everything, and the conveyor, the lazy Susan is spinning, and you just eat a bit of everything as the evening goes along, and you're jumping from one thing to another. It's like symphonic, you know, this the different sounds in your mouth, different textures, cold, hot, slimy, big pieces, small pieces.
I always find the one thing that really makes a difference is if you just like roast some cashews and throw them into a stir fry, like that crunchy texture, or even like bamboo shoots and water chestnuts as well.
Yeah.
Essential and texture adders.
Absolutely. And also you just said roast them before putting them in, like even that extra step.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. They're too creamy if you don't.
And not enough depth of flavor.
No, no. But I always have the problem where I put cashews into the oven and I leave them too long and then they're burnt. But they still taste kind of nice.
You actually roast them, but well, I always toast.
Pan fry.
Yeah, pan fry.
Really? No, I put them in the oven. But like, yeah, the problem is I leave them too long. They're very time sensitive. And then you take them out and they're, oh, fuck. But then you eat them. They're probably really carcinogenic, but they're like super like kind of cocoa-y and chocolatey. I'm like, you know what? I kind of fuck with this. Like, we live with our mistakes. We learn. And then I do it again, you know. Yeah, but I don't pan fry them. I should try that.
I've just recalled a funny incident that, like, again, like involving Rona, who is at the butt of my food comments and habits. But yeah, there was like, she invited me to her birthday party one year and it was in a Chinese restaurant. And it was like, I mean, we can definitely get into this, but like, you know how like lots of Chinese restaurants in the UK or in the West in general is just like very westernized and like watered down, like not very good cooking basically, but because it's different and yeah, people I guess love it. And like, yeah, we were at this restaurant and it was definitely like a very it wasn't catered for Chinese people who lived in London. It was catered for the Western audience, and I was like horrified initially, and then I was eating it. I was just like, I'm having a good time. And I just turned around to Rona, so inappropriate, like having been invited to a dinner for her birthday. I was just like, you know what, Chinese food is such a strong cuisine, like even when it's not that good, it's still really good. And me just saying that, like matter of fact, I didn't even think about it, and Rona just like cracked up laughing, and I was like, oh shit, I've done it again. But yeah, sometimes I do think about that, because it's like even the most watered down, like a dirty Chinese takeaway is tastier than most of, like, I'm not talking about if you go to like a really good restaurant that's like, you know, informed by like British ingredients and like British style cooking, like obviously that's really amazing, but just like the general standard. Like, yeah,
it's all about punchy flavors. So even if it's not well cooked, you can still enjoy what you've got if you've got soy sauce on anything, and it makes it taste better, right?
Thai food is the same. Thai food, like every for flavor sure, in Thai food is so strong that it's like, even if they're not quite balanced right, or the food is the ingredients aren't quite right, like it's still pretty good. Although we very rarely went out for Thai food, slash never went out for Thai food when we were kids. There was one restaurant in Fulham that we used to go to, which I think my dad considered to be like fairly legit, and like, you know, we drove to Fulham from Woodford to go to this place, so he clearly considered
days.
But other than that, like my dad refused to go out for Thai food in London, because he was like, you just can't get, especially when we were kids, like you just couldn't get good Thai food in London. So
the thing is, I do empathize with white people though, because when it comes to like sushi, I was really, when I ate fish, I was really into sushi. We'd get it from like shit sushi chains like in the UK and be like, this is amazing. Went to Tokyo, got actual sushi, and I was like, okay, I see why they did that to Western sushi, because like, I could not deal with the wasabi.
But is it too strong?
Let's talk about spice.
Yeah.
That's like, that's a thing in Thai food as well, though, for the Western palate.
Yeah.
Get rid of spice, get rid of anything that's going to like knock you back. I remember eating meals in Thailand as a kid. I didn't like chili very much growing up. And I remember eating meals in Thailand as a kid where, like, you know, no hostages taken. I was 8 years old, but they still put 15 bird's eye chilies in like a salad, and like crying and having people in the food court, like strangers, like laughing at the little half white kid who like can't handle his spice. And it's like, it's like a competition in Thailand. They like, if the more spice you can eat, the more, you know, the more worthy you are as a human being, basically. So I think it comes to haunt them in the future, but
I never used to be able to deal with spice, and then one day my dad just started putting it in the food and I became accustomed, and now I think everything could do with a bit of spice.
I agree.
That's what I've done with every single relationship in my life, like every person I've ever known. They've started off not liking spice and I just didn't accept that, because I'm just like,
no, you have
that's
to.
Wrong. Again, Rona knows that.
Yeah. Poor Rona.
I had this friend at uni who I used to live with, and we would sometimes cook each other dinner, and I would put way too much spice. Like, he could not handle it. He was a little white boy. And he would get nosebleeds from the spice. I remember once telling...
So weak.
I would never have lived that down if I was him. Anyway, I told this to like a group of white people at my uni course. Like, I didn't realize everyone was white until I started telling this bloody story. But I was like, huh,
bloody.
I was like, huh, isn't it funny that my friend can't handle spice? He gets nosebleeds like a little white boy. And no one laughed. Everyone just turned and looked at me.
And I was like, wrong crowd.
Yeah, I was like, fuck, talking to the nosebleed crowd.
I remember one of my housemates once, we got a curry and she thought the writer that came with the curry was spicy. She was
the
like,
what?
Oh, the writer. It's like the yogurt dish, right? It's like literally there to cool the spice. And she was like, oh, that writer's spicy. And I was like, you've got this all wrong. To be fair to her, she now eats spice, so... yeah.
Character development.
We're still friends.
Yeah.
Over repeated exposure, yeah. at your hand. Zach, you were talking about your dad not taking you guys to any Thai restaurants because it's just like, it's not authentic, it's not good. So while I'm being shady, I've already been quite shady on this show. We went to a restaurant. I want to talk to you about this. We never talked about this actually. But we went to a restaurant in Chinatown. Before
the Wonky.
Yeah, and you were saying, my dad loves this place, let's go there. And I don't know, this could be interesting because you were like, what do you think of it? And that restaurant to me is quite westernized. And also it's very like Canton region, which is like not really like where I'm from anyway. So I don't generally like love to go to like Cantonese restaurants anyway. But like, I've been to Hong Kong, I've been to Guangzhou, and like, I thought that restaurant was quite westernized. And so it's quite interesting that you're saying that your dad really likes that. He's Chinese Thai, and he wouldn't take you guys to any Thai restaurants because they weren't authentic. But the Chinese restaurant that he loved, to me, is like a watered down version of like a Cantonese restaurant.
I have two things to say in response to that. The first is that he only goes for two specific dishes. He goes for roast pork and roast duck on rice and wonton soup. It's the only thing he ever gets. The second thing is that it used to be really, really cheap. And I think my dad's desire to save money as a Chinese man / Thai man is stronger than any other emotional feeling that he has. So he will take bad food to, like, if it costs like £3, he'll do it.
I know the restaurant Wonky's is famous for its bad service and fish cheap food. And it does cater to the more Hong Kong style of food, which in London doesn't work quite so well when the ingredients aren't as fresh as the ingredients you get in Hong Kong, which makes the biggest difference in what you're eating. So Wonky's is an all right restaurant, but yeah, it's very Cantonized, as you said. It's not a mainland kind of place.
And it's not very good.
Yeah, it's cheap and cheerful. It's cheap and cheerful.
Cheap and cheerful. It's a bit of an institution. And people went to be like, to have rude service stuff.
Yeah.
Basically. My mum and aunt were once there and like, they used to seat people on the same tables to like try and fit as many people in. And my mum and my aunt were there and they'd finish and they'd pay the bill and they ended up chatting to the people next to them. And apparently a waitress came over and went, you want to carry on the conversation? Take their number. Get out.
Love it.
And they were like, we love it.
Yeah. It's like, we'll see you next week.
You'll definitely be coming back.
It's just efficient. It's just like, you're here to do one thing, you've done the thing, now leave.
Entirely, yeah.
Yeah. Nigel, any favourite restaurants that you love to go to?
Well, China Canary Wharf is always very good, so we go there.
Royal China.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, are we allowed to advertise something,
please? I mean, please feel free to sponsor us, Royal China, if you're listening.
Fair enough, that'll do. But my favourite food ever was always in Hong Kong, just because of the freshness and the ingredients. And for my grandfather's 70th birthday, they booked out an entire floor of this huge restaurant. They took from about, we started about 6 p.m. and we went through past midnight, and there was over 40 courses. To over 250 people. So yeah, you sit in there for near on 8 hours. Eating.
My dream.
That is Asian culture though, right?
Phenomenal.
My dream.
Thai weddings are like, they're just food. There's no dancing, there's no drinking, there's no talking to each other. It's just food. You go and just eat for hours, queue to have a photo with the bride, and then that's it. See you later. Yeah. go out for a meal after.
I have a restaurant recommendation. It's called Men, which is a great name. It's on Chatsworth Road in Hackney. They hand make their own noodles and they have really good ramen. I appreciate them a lot.
Nice. Yeah. I have a noodle recommendation as well. It's just near Leicester Square and it's called The Noodle Place? No, something like that. It's like right opposite Leicester Square Station. Yeah. But yeah, they have like takeaway stuff, like, but they make their homemade noodles and it's like so good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just had a flashback of like going to Guangzhou when I was a very small child, and like what people think of as like dim sum and like breakfast, like my first experience of that was so overwhelming. It was like such a positive experience, just like people coming around with trolleys with different things that you can pick. And yeah, it really felt like a fantasy dreamland, like so much food.
Yeah, you've got these women walking around the restaurant with these big carts of food and you just see what you want, grab it, and that's it, off you go. In fact, my brother, when he was six, wanted this particular item and he was trying to tell my mum what it was, and he called it up and down cake because it was up there and down there. He just finally had to go running up the aisle to grab it out of the trolley and bring it back to us because he couldn't describe it any other way. But it was now known as up and down cake.
What is the cultural significance of like the zao chao, like the breakfast thing? Like, is it like a weekend thing, or is it like when would you typically go?
In Hong Kong, it's most days. Seriously, my grandparents would go swimming every morning at dawn. So 4 o'clock in the morning, they'd go meet their friends, go swimming for 2 hours, and then when they'd finished, everyone that was available would go to the restaurant to meet them and have dim sum together. That was breakfast. That was it. Everyone would meet up as much as possible.
And how many, like how long would that, like a typical like Tuesday morning swim, and then how long would the breakfast literally take?
At least a couple of hours afterwards.
Okay. So like more of a pensioner activity.
Yeah, this was, they were retired by this stage.
Yeah.
Yeah,
sounds amazing. I want that. I guess that's like quite similar to brunch, like brunch culture. Like brunch is the best thing. Come on, like sweet, savoury.
Yeah, so my family still do that. Whenever I meet up with brothers, sisters and parents at the weekend, we go and do dim sum. It's the same thing. We all meet up, have breakfast, chat there, and that's it. Then we go about our separate weekends or days.
Yeah.
And we do that as much as possible. That's our main family activity.
Yeah. You know? That's so lovely. Yeah. One thing that is a very, very strong one in my family is like, my mum is from Qingdao, which is like northern China. And like, basically the more north you go, the more you use wheat, like dough as a, for like noodles or dumplings. And like the Japanese call it like in Chinese it's just called jiaozi, and like gyoza obviously comes from that. So the little half moon shaped dumplings, which can be fried or boiled. Yeah, that's like a really important dish. So like during Chinese New Year, definitely have jiaozi. And also like when you leave somewhere in Qingdao, there's this like tradition, it's called like guindan jiaozi, which is like hard to like almost like get the fuck out of here, jiaozi. Like, you're leaving now, like, kick you out the bar, here's some jiaozi, like, but in a very loving way. And so every time I go home to, I mean, like, it's obviously, like, just a great food anyway, but that's something that, like, on the last day, we spend the morning, like, making dumplings, and, like, my dad's, like, finally learned how to, like, roll out the skin, the casing, and then, like, my mum's, like, done everything else, and I'm, like, tasting and learning in the process, and I'm, like, doing a bit of everything, and we just, like, make dumplings together, and then we eat it, and then, like, she gives me, like, a massive Tupperware of it to take home, and then I go on my way to the airport. So, like, that's one thing in my family that's, like, very traditional, tied to food, that happens, like, every time I go home.
Yeah, every time I go home, I come back with loads of Tupperware as well. I think tradition-wise, like...
Crumble, is it?
with loads of Tupperware, but also crumble. There is crumble in Tupperware. Yeah, I would say tradition-wise, on New Year, my dad always makes, like, long life noodles.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
For your birthday?
No, sorry, for New Year.
New Year, yeah. Okay.
I would say that's the only one I can think of that, like, regularly, like, clockwork. I'm like, time for long life noodles.
Long life noodles.
Yeah. What are long life noodles?
They're just long noodles, and you're not meant to
bite them, break
yeah,
them.
Yeah, you're not meant to break them because it's like the idea of you'll have a long
longevity,
life.
Yeah. Mm, like extra long noodles.
I see. That makes sense. Yeah. We don't have a tradition that we do around food all the time, but I think the closest thing I can think of is our love for omelets.
Oh, yeah. For no, Thai this omelets. Is the thing
like,
as well.
Thai omelets are the best omelets in the world. I'm sorry, French, move over. Like, they are incredible.
I mean, Asian food is hands down better than French food.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Of course. But a Thai omelet is like, there's a lot of oil and the oil is extremely hot and it's like, the best ones are basically deep fried. But it's eaten a lot in Thailand, but it's not eaten as much as we eat it as a family. So like in Thailand, it will be a dish on its own. You'll have like rice and omelet. Whereas we have it with every single meal. And like when my dad used to cook a Thai meal as kids, if there wasn't an omelet on the table, like we'd either ask for one or one of us would make it, because it's just like, to us, it is like the most integral part of a Thai meal. Everything else can change, but there has to be an omelet on the table. And I still eat omelets like 4 or 5 times a week. In fact, that was one of the hardest things, that my period of being vegan, it was really hard to not eat omelets. And it's part of the reason I stopped being vegan.
Yeah. Omelet was the first thing I learned how to cook, actually. But I always find it weird when I see white people cook omelet and they don't use soy sauce.
Yeah, I know, it's weird.
Yeah, do you know what,
doesn't
Zach,
make sense.
Maybe just describe to us how you make your Thai omelet.
Okay, so get the wok on the hob, crank it up to like the highest heat available, put quite a lot of oil in there, specifically like vegetable oil. It doesn't work with other oils. And then crack some eggs into a bowl, bit of soy sauce, bit of fish sauce, no fish sauce if you're vegetarian, but a bit of soy sauce, a bit of fish sauce traditionally, little tiny crack of black pepper, a little tiny dash of cold water, which helps it crisp up, and then
no salt. Oh yeah, because
no salt.
Yeah,
no salt.
Soy sauce and fish sauce quite salty.
And then whisk it up, and then once the oil is like steaming, you pour it in, and it should go like whoosh as it hits the pan, and then you keep pulling the edges back into the middle to allow the batter to like hit the edges and cook. And then once it's kind of like cooked on one side, you flip it, close it, and then it's done. And it should just be like super crispy around the edges and then like soft and fluffy in the middle and delicious. And you
so
can also
beautiful.
Put minced pork in it or veggie mince, which is another traditional dish, which is great.
I've started eating that constantly since you taught me. It is literally the best. Just like have that with rice. After climbing, a bit of rice, a 3-egg omelet.
3 eggs? Wow.
It's a lot of
I
eggs.
Thought 2 was standard, but you're really pushing the goat out with
10 p.m. Yeah. That was really nice to hear that recipe. I think we've really given back to our community in this episode, like restaurant recommendations, recipes.
Oh, we didn't talk about rice cookers.
Oh, I think we should talk about rice cookers.
Can't talk about Asian food without talking about spice and rice. Rice cookers are important. I don't know how to cook rice in a pan. I do
yeah,
now,
nor
but
do
I didn't
I.
for years. And actually, when I first went to uni, I didn't take a rice cooker with me, which was terrible. I did every other year. But I remember cooking rice on the hob and not putting a lid on it and like trying to boil the water and just really making a complete hash of it. And one of my housemates, I clocked him as like, oh, I need to put a lid on this, don't I? And one of my housemates went, yeah, I didn't want to say anything because you're Asian, so I thought you probably know what you're doing. But like, I've never seen anyone cook rice like that.
So awkward.
It is a great way to clock how many Asians there are in a uni flat, though. Yeah. Or anywhere, because that is the one thing their parents will always give them.
Yeah.
Like, and they'll always get you a really nice... My dad got me one which was like stainless steel. He was like, you're not getting an aluminium one. They will scratch. He gave me a nice stainless steel rice cooker.
I actually once bought a rice cooker home from Thailand for my parents in my suitcase. It was the only thing that fit in my suitcase.
Yeah, no, my dad's done that, bringing rice cookers back from Malaysia.
Isn't that a scene in that movie, In the Mood for Love, that like he goes to Japan and brings back rice cooker? Act of love. Language of love.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same. Yeah.
Yeah.
Same
yeah.
idea.
No, I'm actually a little ashamed. I don't own a rice cooker.
What the fuck?
I know. Outrageous. I just don't eat enough rice anymore.
What do you mean? Wait, but you're... I don't know. Do Cantonese... I don't know. You eat less rice generally, no?
No. In Hong Kong...
I'm trying to give you a step to come down
adult,
on.
5 bowls of rice is kind of a minimum for any meal. But yeah, I eat more westernised diet now. So rice is much lower on the scale of the things that I eat. So I always cook it in a pan now instead of...
I think we should cut you out of this podcast, Nigel.
I did say I was ashamed of it. But yeah.
I didn't have a rice cooker until like 3 years ago. Like in my family, I think it's because my mum always cooked rice in a pressure cooker. Maybe? don't know, I'm trying to find excuses for myself.
A pressure cooker is just a glorified rice cooker anyway.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's true. Or the other way around. But yeah, definitely, like, rice cooker changed my life.
Yeah, no, it's life changing.
Like, trying to cook sticky rice or, like, sticky rice in, you have to soak it for, like, 2 days and then, like, cook it for, like, so long in the rice cooker, same amount of time as, like, normal rice. Boom, done.
Yeah.
Yeah, best invention ever.
Yeah, long live the rice cooker.
Long live the rice cooker. I actually didn't realize that rice was kind of like an Asian staple. I thought it was just a staple for everyone when I was growing up because my dad always cooked it. Yeah, I just thought it was a staple for life. Then I realized that white people have potatoes. Sorry, I'm really going in on white people in this. It's not their fault that they only have potatoes and they don't have glorious rice paddies. But also, why? Like... Anyway.
But Joe, didn't you say on the last episode that you prefer rice cooked not in a rice cooker? Did you not say that?
No.
Did I dream that? Was that Smiko? I feel like someone said that.
I did and not I wasn't say
sure.
that.
Are you sure?
Yeah. Rice wow. from a rice cooker is fluffy.
Our audience can verify.
Yeah.
Write into us and tell
Pull
us.
Me out.
Yeah, so yeah, we'd love to hear from our audience. If you have recipes or food stories to share, feel free to contact us. We will read out our favorite responses on the bonus episode. Email us at info@thirdmagazine.co.uk. That's third with three I's. Or DM us on Instagram at thirdmagazine. That's third with three I's.
I felt so much shade from Daniela coming for Zach and his dad. Not just him, his dad and the food. His favourite restaurant, wasn't it?
Mm.
Literally. Yeah. There was never a need.
And then Zach had to come through with his loyal energy and just be like, two things. And the dad orders two recipes, two meals only. Yeah, it was wonderful.
Yeah, actually, even his comeback, I was like, that is so insightful. Like, do you know when there's a thing that you really go for at a restaurant? Like, if I'm going to go to a Nigerian restaurant, there might be certain things that I will get where I'm like, I'm not going to eat this at home. So I'm gonna order it here. Mm. Nothing else. I'm not going to mess around with this and that because I can get that or I don't feel for that. But here and when I go to a restaurant, I'm going to get those.
You know what? The more I think about it, I actually think that is definitely a migrant parent thing. Mm. Because, yeah, my mum definitely goes to, like, when she gets... like Nigerian food out, it's certain dishes only. It's not like just anything on the menu. It's like this and this, or just this and this. So yeah, it made a lot of sense.
I definitely connected with the leftover mentality. Like, if you're cooking and you run out of food, then like, what are you doing? Like, what? Who are you cooking for? Like, if people can't get seconds and there's no options for that, like I think it was who was it? Was it Joe who said they had to leave home because the apple crumbles was too much and they were worried.
That actually sounded like my heaven, to be honest with you. Yeah. That and the conversation around rice was just my bag, 100%, because I love rice, full stop. And I was really excited for this episode, as I know Daniela's a massive foodie.
Yeah.
So I was interested to see where she'd take it.
Yeah.
And we went from rice to what? Homemade noodles.
Yes.
Crumble, which I never expected at all. We had restaurant recommendations.
True.
I feel like this episode was really giving in terms of like your to-do list afterwards.
Yeah.
I'm definitely going to try and make one of those omelets, you know.
What's your relationship to rice? Are you a rice head as well?
I love rice. Yeah. I actually know another stylist who we bonded when I found out she had rice over her knuckles. And I was like, oh my gosh, that is an amazing tattoo.
That's
and
so
she
specific.
Literally looked at me and she was like, yeah. And I was like, we'll be friends.
Yeah.
We'll be friends. Every male should have rice.
Oh my God. Like, I think that's a commitment to get it tattooed on your body. Like,
but it is very special. Think about it.
It's a foundation.
It's a base
thing.
Maker.
It is a base.
And it's. Sorry, now I'm just going to start defending rice, so I'll just stop.
Yeah. I feel like you're not picking up. I said I'm not as passionate. I remember when I was in Brazil,
I had rice twice a day for a month. And I think from then it's just become a thing where it's like, oh, rice. I'm not against it. And like jollof rice, fried rice, you know, egg fried rice, all those kind of things. But I really felt the passion come through in this episode, that I was passionate for their passion as opposed for the rice.
I also found it was quite telling that Nigel nearly got booted out of the group for not having a rice cooker.
And I also appreciated the survival tactics to eat fast and at the dinner table. And I think it was Daniela who said that they didn't have that inclination because they grew up as an only child, so they could take their time. Who knows, walk off into the other room, come back, the food will still be there. Whilst I had an older brother and a younger brother who really knew how to eat growing up. And
brothers especially.
And brothers. So like, I think it does, there's an anxiety when it comes to eating that you never really fully let go of. And it, for me as well, I also look to see if my food's been tampered with, because my younger brother would water down my food, take a little bit of my food and then water down, like, it's a whole thing. So for me, I really felt that and it brought back some painful memories. So thank you for that in that episode. It really... One last point, the passion for food. I did feel like there was a little bit of a, side eye to Western cultures with their food. But to be fair, my housemates, one is half Italian and another is French. And they are the, so I stayed with my French one last year with their family. And that whole, like, what are we eating? We'll finish breakfast and we'll be talking about what we're going to eat at lunchtime. And then we'll go out fishing. In between then, like, the whole day is centered around food. I do love it. I do love it. But I did feel like there was a lack of appreciation for some Western countries outside of England and UK that also share that passion for food. So I did want to kind of give a shout out to the Italians and the French. And I'm sure maybe even not Polish, there's another Moldovan. I've lived with some various European countries where like food is everything in that community.
If you want to see some BTS, head to our TikTok where you can see what went down in the recording of this show.
You can also catch more from us on our website, www.thirdmagazine.co.uk, also with three eyes.
And don't forget to help spread the word. Share the show with a friend, a colleague, your mum, or just rate and review us wherever you're listening.
If you're enjoying listening to us during this series, you might want to check out one of our earlier shows.
There are 20 episodes to listen back to, covering rich topics such as
dark tourism,
sex and relationships,
cultural appropriation
and cancel culture.
All of the music you've been hearing on this show is from our guest Reese's record label, Emperor Recordings. If you search them on Instagram, their logo has a dog in it. Follow them and go to their parties.